And she's going to be our Sunday morning spiritual speaker. And I'm sure that we will add her to our list of great speakers also. And her name is Lady Jane. Let's give her a warm welcome.
Hi. Well, like Terry said, they call me Lady Jane. I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Hi, Lady Jane.
Thank you, God, and thank you, AA. It's funny because I found out later that God led me to AA. But I always thought that AA led me to God, you know, and my sponsor explained to me that it's the job of a sponsor to take the hand of God and the hand of the newcomer and get them closer and closer until they can walk together. And I had a sponsor from the moment I walked in. And I'm sure that between having the sponsor and having the willingness and having so many old-timers around me who were willing to take care of me, because I was a wet brain when I came in, according to medical science, that that's the reason why I've never had to go back out. I keep going to meetings to find out what happens to people who don't go to meetings, you know, as Boston Joey used to say. I want to thank Sharon and Don for the privilege of being here and being your speaker today. I, throughout my sobriety a way long time ago, by the way, my sobriety date is February 20th, 1985, so I just turned 21. And unlike some of my friends who have the same amount of sobriety, who will tell you that they're just as crazy as the day they walked in, that's not true for me. This is a program of recovery for me, and I have changed considerably. The program does work slowly, slowly, but I have changed considerably. And I no longer want to burn your house down if you step on my toes. That's a big one. And now when I go to jail every week, they let me leave the same day. I still have a problem with the cards. And I still get maced at DMV. So, slowly, slowly. But I send Mary Ellen to go and torment them to get even. Balance the score a little. Don and his Little Rock have comforted me and reminded me throughout my sobriety. And then up at Beaver, I told him I lost my rock, and he gave me this green jade rock. And Friday night, while I was at the LA airport, somehow I lost my rock again. And as soon as I walked in, I go, "Don, I'm so irresponsible. I lost my rock again." And there he was with another green rock, exactly like the one I've carried all these years. And it's funny how something like that, that you can hold on to. They told me when I was new that the reason that there was a space between my teeth was because when I got my chip, I was supposed to hold it. And at the Valley Club in the Nest, where I got sober in San Fernando Valley of California, I didn't want anybody to know I was an alcoholic. Although I found out later that everybody knew. There was, I mean, how many people crawl around in the parking lot looking for their car? I mean, you know. So there was no secret there. I stayed out a long time. But I walked around, and our chips were plastic. And they had these little chains sticking out of them. And I walked around the Sherman Oaks Galleria where I worked with this chain dripping out of my mouth because they told me I should keep it in my mouth until I didn't want to drink anymore. And so you could see me all over, shopping, anything I was doing with this chain dripping out of my mouth. But I didn't want anybody to know that I went to AA. Right. So, I have other people too that it's funny. St. George, this is my first time being here, and I feel like I'm in the spiritual center of AA or something. Almost everybody I've met seems more qualified to stand up here than I am, and I'm so impressed by the youth and the program here. You know, it's like, here comes the lifeblood. True, the old-timers are the heartbeat. But we need that blood. We need the young blood of the newcomer. And to have young newcomers, it's like, it comforts me so much to know that your children will never know the horrific nightmares that my daughters lived through. That your children will never have to be afraid to close their eyes at night because their mother or father might come home and yet be so hungry that they want them to come home, you know, because their mom went out for a pack of cigarettes 2 weeks ago and hasn't found her way back yet, or found the dumpster behind the AM/PM more comfortable than her own house because even though it was only three blocks away, I couldn't find it. You know, and your children will never have to know that. Hopefully you'll break the chain with your generation. I warn Norm that this is, even though it looks like a speaker meeting to you, it's really a discussion meeting. And so I'm a little fragmented, you know, but that's because we all want part of this. So I was real intimidated after listening to Frank Keane last night because he's such an eloquent speaker. And knowing him for almost 14 years now, I can tell you I've never seen a man who walks more like he talks. And it's, I've never seen a man quite so humble either. And I know this is going to sound like an Academy Award thing, but I have some people I want to thank. I want to thank my precious friend, Eva, for driving all the way down to Las Vegas to cut my hair for me so I would look good enough to feel confident enough to stand up here. And then, of course, I trashed it this morning doing it myself. But and she's such a loving, wonderful friend, and watching her grow has been such a privilege of mine. And I want to thank Michael and Lisa from the hospitality room. Wow, you guys rock! I'm telling you. It's only been 21 years, so for me, there's no such thing as an AA meeting without a cup of coffee. And wow, they made sure no matter what, even without electricity or whatever, they made that coffee be there on time. And I was really impressed. And I'll tell you, I travel a lot, and I go to meetings and in a lot of countries, and New Zealand, I mean Tonga, you know, all sorts of places. And I love going to conventions. And wow, you guys are the queens and kings of hospitality, I'll tell you. It would be totally possible here from that hospitality room to and from the people in this room to feel like you're walking into somebody's living room and you can just take your shoes off and relax. Just, you know, that sound that I used to get when I drank. And then, like on page 22, when alcohol ceased to be enough, then medication. And then the men, and then the food, and then the whatever I could find to get that. And now I get that just walking in to most meetings, that same feeling. And the problem is, before, when I was out there, I had to keep switching obsessions because that feeling wouldn't last long enough. I kept burning out my last drug of choice. But yet for 21 years and some days, that feeling is still here. And I'll tell you, sometimes the world kind of beats me up a little bit. And I run like hell into these meetings. And I have the privilege of going to an Indian meeting in Las Vegas. And some of these guys like Roger and stuff, they take that sage and they just all over me and my feet and my hands and everything. And then, you know, when they hand me the feather, they go, "Watch your mouth." You know, and, you know. So it's, life is so good. I can't tell you. I can't stand those syrupy, sick people who get up here after 30 days and say, "Oh, sobriety's so wonderful, and I just love life." And I always thought, "You liar. You liar." You know? And I'm there. I'm there. When my husband died in the car next to me, I was able to say, "God is in charge. God is in charge." And I called somebody from AA, and they all came. They all came and helped me. And my friends and relatives said my life was over. Now I'm a widow, you know. My friends from AA said, "Your new life is starting. Take my hand." And I go, "No, I can't. I'm not strong enough." And they said, "That's why you're taking my hand." Right? And they took me to this guy, Kim Robinson, a biker guy. He took me to all these wacky pack meetings or whatever they're called with all the teenage recovering alcoholics, and I sat there with my eyes swollen out to there and sitting there while they talked about I don't know, woofers and tweeters and things like that. No clue, and I've never met them in a meeting yet, but you know, so I definitely wanna really thank the Alano Group for the most awesome barbecue. Whoa. Yeah. I'm trying to meet this mother-daughter team that was responsible for the killer potato salad, and haven't yet. But I got Rose to give me the recipe for the macaroni salad, complete with details. And so I'm going to carry that blessing back with me, you know. And then Sharon gave me this most wonderful Charlene with 31 years of sobriety, who was willing to show me what spirituality is all about. Because she was totally the servant. Totally the servant. And I said, well, I don't want to go to the barbecue because if I go to the barbecue, then I'm going to miss the talent contest and da-da-da-da-da. And she goes, we can do it all. We can leave whenever you want to. And I thought, well, yeah, but I don't want to inconvenience you. And she goes, I'm here for you. And I was like, wow, now there's a concept. That's what I've been demanding all my life. And now I finally, I have it all wrapped up in this beautiful woman. I mean, it's unbelievable. Okay, I want to, there were two things that kind of kept me sober. The first time I laughed out loud and found out what we were kind of about was, because remember, when I came in, I was autistic. I couldn't speak at all. I didn't know a 3 from a 9, so I couldn't dial a telephone. When I stood up, I was weighed 120 pounds. I was a skinny bag of bones. But when I stood up, I had to cut my hands and hold my liver because it stuck out 19 and a half inches. And they ended up eventually cutting some of it off. And then now, which medical science said could never happen. You don't want to know my opinion about medical science. But what they couldn't heal, love and laughter did. And they just did a scan about a year ago of my liver, and there's not even scar tissue. There's nothing. You know, and I know we're all walking miracles, but I feel like the queen. They call me Lady Jane because I wasn't. They wanted me to act as if, you know. They're real big on that in California, acting as if. I had to come a half hour early to make sure I got my chair. And somebody once in a meeting said my name was on it. And I used to come early and turn over all those chairs looking for my name. And one day I came in and there were no empty seats. And I had an anxiety attack. I mean, I almost passed out. I was freaking out. There was no seat for me in AA. And some man, red white, with 31 years sobriety, got up and he said, there will always be a seat for you in AA. I promise you. I promise you. And he kept that word. And anyway, this guy stood up one day and he said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for being here, and I especially want to thank God for those alcoholic toilet seats. You know, the ones that have the middle cutout so when you're leaning over and it falls down on you, it misses your head. And he says, yeah. That was Johnny Duggan, who never kind of smiled, I didn't think. But when he said that, I felt this hollow sound in my back. And someone touched me and said, and I went, and someone touched me and said, don't be afraid. That's called laughter. And love and laughter is what will heal you. And a man named Charlie Bloom told me that AA is the only place where you can cast your bread on the water and get back a club sandwich. And I always remembered Charlie Bloom for telling me that. And at that time, when I needed to eat because I had swallowed so many things that had alcohol for an ingredient, like cleaning fluids and stuff like that, I had no digestive tract. So I couldn't eat food. And I would have to lay down on the floor and put a bag on a doorknob and stick a tube down a hole in my stomach for nutrition. Which I, for some reason, thought that if it was vodka, it just meant it would work faster. And so by the time I got in sobriety and somebody informed me that it was for vitamins and protein and stuff, it was like, wow, what a concept. Here I thought it was just a quicker way to get drunk. And in sobriety, that has been changed now, too. Obviously, you can see. I tend to like to switch obsessions, try them all. And eating happens to be a legal one. And besides, I live in a buffet town, right? I can't help it, you know? So, and this guy, Dale L.S., who every time, and he would spend, they would let me go and sit with Dale for hours because I had to have babysitters because since I was a wet brain, they didn't know where I was going to go if I left the meeting halls. And he told this joke one day. And, you know, Jared and Eva said it's okay to tell this from the podium, so here goes. This drunk is walking down the street and he's got his keys in his hand, and a cop comes up and stops him. And he goes, Johnny, what are you doing? You're walking around with your keys in your hand, and what's that all about? And Johnny looks down and he goes, oh, I guess I lost my car. So then the cop proceeds to say, and look at you. You're all undone, and you're hanging out and everything. And Johnny looks down and he goes, gee, I guess I lost my girlfriend, too. Okay, I'm done. When I first got here, I learned to love the process, the AA meetings, the book studies. I had to go to a lot of book studies and step meetings because I couldn't read the book myself. And by the way, I was a member of the Fortune 500 Club for 8 years before that. I was one of the top 500 money producers in the United States of America until alcohol... until I traded it for one last drink. Okay. So, we are overachievers. And according to Abraham Lincoln, one of the reasons that we are given to the beverage is because we see all the injustices of the world and we can't take care of them all. And that was his theory. For me, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm always going to be an alcoholic. And I go to meetings to never forget that. And so I want to thank all of you who keep going back out there and coming back with arrows in your back, so I know that it's still not better out there. Actually, it looks like it's getting a lot worse than it was for me. But, you know, there's this whole ball. And it's like the steps, the big book, the meetings, the sponsor, the writing, the 500-pound phone, the 10,000-pound pencil. Oh, my God, I hate writing. All of that. And then someone says, well, what part can you leave out? Well, the ball won't bounce if you leave any of it out, you know. And a friend of Bill Wilson's, our co-founder, one of our co-founders, who was a minister, had told him about how all these people keep going to the subway or to the train station. They keep going and they keep going. But if they don't get on the train, they're never going to go anywhere. And yet how cool. If you do get on the train, it just carries you. It carries you. And that's what AA did for me. It carried me into a life beyond my wildest dreams. And it's given me fringe benefits. In sobriety, this wet brain went to UCLA School of Law. You know, in sobriety, I got a degree in counseling, which I don't use, but I just wanted to be a better sponsor. But, yeah. You know, we have to do everything maxed out. 5 years of sobriety, and I'm so excited about, I'm going to get my cake. And our meetings were really big then, and I kept calling the ballet club and saying, save me a seat. Don't worry, we will. And then I'd call and say, save my sponsor a seat. And then I'd call up and say, oh, save Joni a seat. And so finally he says, don't call me again. Call your sponsor. And he hung up. And I knew better than that. I was supposed to call my sponsor at 7:15 every morning. And if I was late, my sponsor would pick up the phone and I'd go, hi, I'm sorry I'm late, but I got twisted up in my sheets or whatever. And my sponsor would say, you're late, and hang up. And I'd freak out. Now I don't know what to do. What am I supposed to do next? And I had a list. Wake up, hit your knees, get shoes from under the bed, say thank you while you're down there, and by then I could already read, and get dressed, you know, eat something. I wasn't allowed to leave the house till I ate something. And all this training that's become a part of me now. And ironically enough, when my husband died, who was a hard body at the age of 52, the doctor said the reason he died of old age was because every 3 hours you're awake, every 1 hour that you're awake, that you don't eat, your heart ages three. And 52 years old, died of old age. Hard body. Lived on vitamins. So, my training, that bacon and eggs training, served me very well. And anyway, 5 years sober. Oh, so now I got this blouse on, this really pretty blouse, and I'm really going to act as if, because now I got 5 years, right? And they can stop saying I'm really sober, because they always said, well, you're not sober until you have over 5 years. And so now I'm really sober, right? So I ironed my blouse, and all of a sudden I remembered we need to save a seat for somebody, and I went and called, and I came back, and I picked the iron up, and there's a big hole in the back of my shirt, right, where the iron had just burned all the way through. And I thought, now what am I going to do? And I thought, well, I'll just walk forward. Okay? So, and now you see why I needed a sponsor, right? And that was my best thinking at 5 years. And then, after that, I put it on, and I looked in the mirror, and I thought, okay, you can do this. This looks good. Okay, very good. And then, especially because a lot of the times I used to come in my pajamas, but I came. I was desperate. They told me to go out and sit on the curb and somebody would just miraculously drive by and get me and take me to a meeting. And they never told me to get dressed first. So, I started to walk out the door, and when I reached for the handle, I saw that the cuffs on my blouse were not ironed. And I went back, and the iron was still on, and I was so grateful that the iron was still on, and I just simply picked it up and rolled it across my wrist. Yes. Instant blisters. Could hardly breathe. It hurt so bad. So I already learned not to put butter on. I went and put it under cold water. And when the pain finally went away long enough that I could stand up on my own again, I went back and I reached for the door handle with the other hand, and I saw that that cuff wasn't done again. And you're right. Insanity. I picked up the iron and did the other wrist. But I was not late for my meeting. That's 5 years. And this guy, Tom Gloss, looked at me after I went up and shared some brilliant thing. And he said, you know, you don't get it. You don't get it. You got 5 years of sobriety and you don't get it. And I used to hate that when they always called it it. What is it? And he said, you push that vacuum all over your living room all day long. I go to meetings, I write, I call, I work with newcomers, da-da-da. What am I not getting? And he says, you keep pushing the vacuum around and you never plug it in to the power. I didn't have that spiritual connection because I thought God was some cosmic killjoy. And as soon as I gave him any credit or loved something or in any way wanted something, that he was going to snatch it away from me. And it wasn't until after 5 years of sobriety I learned that God didn't take things away from me. He wasn't that cosmic killjoy. I sabotaged myself because deep down I knew that I wasn't worth that reward. So I would push you out the door. I would push you away. And I would do stupid things to destroy whatever goal it was I wanted. And I now, it's like every time I walk out, it's God help me plug in that vacuum. Help me have that spiritual awareness. Let me know that you're in charge. And but now Saturday night, right after that at the Nest, somebody told me to shut up. And she was an old timer and I tore her to shreds. And so Joe Gomez and all his friends took me and threw me in the dumpster out back. And I was hysterical because I'm terrified of spiders. And I, to this day, you can see my footprints in that dumpster trying to kick my way out. And yet, the cool thing about AA, and they kept telling me, if you stop kicking, we'll let you out. And I would die first, right? Almost did. And they finally let me out. And when they did, they said, okay, we'll see you tomorrow morning for the 7 a.m. meeting. You know? And it was like, I couldn't do anything bad enough. I used to throw coffee pots at people and stuff like that. And I couldn't do anything bad enough that they wouldn't ask me back. So I really got off on this love and tolerance is our code. I like that that was your code, you know. And when I had about 28 days, they gave me to this guy, Ziggy, and they said, take her up to Tehachapi State Prison and let the guy see what happens if you keep drinking. And so before I even got my 30-day chip, here I was piled into a car on the two-and-a-half-hour road to Tehachapi. And I liked that. I liked that. I'd go running in and sit with the prisoners, and I felt great. And they taught me freedom. These guys were serving a lifetime sentence. And I would come up there and I'd say, let me tell you something. This woman She needs to die, and I know, make a call. I brought you 25 cents, and I want you to call and make sure. Now, I dug a hole right near her front door, and all you have to do is take the wires from here and the wires from here. And I had it all planned, but my sponsor wouldn't let me do it. So I had to get them to make the call, right? And those guys taught me freedom. Good thing for that lady, she's still alive. And they taught me how to walk free because they didn't have that hatred and that anger. And I was a horrible rageaholic. Even in sobriety, I would pull people out of trucks and cars and stuff. Semis, I love that. Get out, man. Come on. And, yeah. Back in those days, men couldn't beat up women without other men coming to protect them. So I always did it when there was a crowd. You know? So, but you know, I love going to Tehachapi, and I wanted to be of service. And so from that day, I still go at least once a week, most of the time, to a jail. And when I got to Vegas, it was like people were really into division, where I thought AA kind of gave us unity. But there it was like, oh no, you're either in NA, CA, AA, GA. And it had all these tons of divisions. So I walked into the jail and I said, well, you know what? We need I would like to bring in a 12-step meeting. And the guards had no idea what that was for. And I said, well, you know, for women who love too much, for women who do drugs, women who gamble, women who write bad checks, women who are so obsessed, you know, that they can hardly breathe. I said, okay, fine, I'll take some of the pressure off the guards. And so I've been doing that there for 14 years. And the gift of that, I make them write a list as to who they think God is. And then the next week they have to write a list as to who they want God to be. And then what's separating them from having that God. And it's usually, for me, it was fear of having to go be in a monastery in Africa or something. And then it was pride, or maybe I wasn't going to ever have sex again. I couldn't stand that. I did not want to turn my will and my life over to the care of God because I knew that's what he wanted for me, to be sexless forever. And now I'm living that kind of life and it's okay. Most of the time. This is a program of honesty, okay? But I got to tell you, it was because I was flirting with Joe last night that I left my cup, and I had to go beg Luana for another cup because I was so tied up with looking at him, and my cup was on the ground, and he's up here. And so, younger man, okay? So, and before I forget, talking about men, wow, that little Bieber brigade that's here today, the guys that went up to Bieber, some of the things, first of all, I mean, Lynette's my alter ego. If she does stuff, I want to, you know, and I had the privilege of staying at her place last time when I went to Bieber, and I told her, I said, do you have a place for me this year? And she goes, I don't think so. And I go, I don't want to stay in the fort. There might be bugs there. And up until Bieber, I had never been in this state at all. So I love Bieber. And every time I see anybody with a shirt on from Bieber, it brings back all those memories and those great feelings instantly. And it's like, everywhere I go, I can't buy enough shirts. because I want everybody to have these shirts, because when I'm wearing this shirt, and I have the t-shirt, I have the sweatshirt, I have the long sleeve shirt, you know, because, and every time I wear it, it brings back all the memories of being here this weekend. You know, those feelings of having my family hugging me. I loved all the hugs here. You know, when you're in Texas, you can't hardly get those guys to hold hands during the Lord's Prayer. And so it's really cool being here. One of the girls from the jail, one of her lists, she said she wanted that the thing that she wanted was God's way from no way. She wanted her life to be God's way because she just felt so hopeless. And I've taught these girls to walk in a pack and keep the weaker ones in the middle so the guards can't get them, so the other girls can't get to them. Keep them safe and surround them on the way to get their food, on their way back, on their way to the shower. Surround the weaker girl. And now, in the women's prison there, they actually have a group called ATU where they set aside the recovering prisoners so they don't even have to get into the general population. And I'll tell you, I thought it was a big thing when I got sober. I really did. I thought it was a miracle of miracles. And I was so proud. But I'll tell you, there's nothing that feels better than seeing one of those people get their cake. That is the ultimate in the high. Where's Sharon? Did I do enough? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.